This week, I may be wrong. Crazy, right? The potential origin of Vancouver's brakeman was a real person. Then, I personally think it's the best way to live life. Let's talk about Wu Wei, aka the art of non-doing. Do you guys remember last week? Remember when I was attacking? I was attacking Vancouver. It was a little unfair. I actually listened back to the episode and I thought I was being a little bit too harsh. I know a lot of people love the city of Vancouver, and maybe it's just my own personal experiences there that have soured me on the idea of it. But I mean, the truth is that they didn't have as deep a history as some of the other locations within Canada. Canada's a very young country overall. Quebec, I guess you could state, is the oldest, the Maritimes. Ontario next. And then as you go west of the country, things are much newer. And Vancouver falls into that category of being newer. Victoria, you know, a little bit older. But Vancouver is much newer. So when they start talking about the ghost stories and stuff, I always start with a mindset of skepticism when looking into the stories. Some of them just, they don't seem to have a real base to them. So there's some validation from history. Many of them seem to be legends, or they follow certain stereotypes that you hear about ghost stories from everybody all the time. All the ghost tours you've been on, all the website articles that you read, the usual stuff of flickering lights and footsteps and things supposedly moving around. And as sometimes they make the mistake of going a little bit too far, as I mentioned last week with the security guard in the room where the desks were moving around in like a puzzle-like manner. It seemed too over the top. So then I also unfortunately went a little too far with my crapping when it came to the brakeman, because I said wholeheartedly that I didn't think the brakeman was real, that I thought they were just a legend. And it's the same in Ontario. There's certain stories like the Dark Lady of the Custom House or Captain Swayze of the Angel Inn, where you can question whether these were actual people or just legends of stories told throughout history that, you know, the names don't match the real person that existed. So when I was continuing on with a little bit of research in relation to the brakeman, I actually found an article. Now, upon further review, I realize this accident did not happen in Vancouver. It happened in another place in BC known as North Bend. And if you're not familiar, I don't think a lot of people are, it's about 3 hours, so a three-hour drive from Vancouver. So not overly far. But we do have an actual person. It was a fellow named Albert Smith. So this is going back to 1928, so almost 100 years ago. And I found an article that states, a jury finds death of brakeman Albert Smith was accidental. So the story in 1928, in January 19th at 3 a.m., that this fellow named Albert Smith was out on the train yard as a train was coming in. And I guess he wasn't paying attention, or he was distracted by something, and he got hit by a train. So the brakeman's story that I presented last week did surround somebody who supposedly got hit by a train and had his head decapitated. That's not the case here. This guy was hit in the back, and because of the damage that it did to his body, he died soon after in the hospital. So like a couple days later, he was dead. So this may have been, this guy is a brakeman, Albert Smith, not from Vancouver, but it does fit the timeline. I think the brakeman's death supposedly happened in 1928. That's what kind of drew me to it. I know you might be saying, well, it didn't happen in Vancouver, Daniel. How's that? Well, no, it's the same year. So 1928, I think, was the timeline with the other brakeman known as Hub Clark, which, by the way, I couldn't find any evidence of any Hub Clark, that a Hub Clark even existed in British Columbia. I couldn't find anything at all. But I did find this. The same year, supposedly, it happened. This guy was killed by getting hit by a train. And in the end, it was deemed an accident. So very possibly, I will state it right now, that the Hub Clark of the legendary ghost of the CPR station in Vancouver could be connected to Albert Smith, who died in the same year, died from being hit by a train. And me adding that little bit of history, I think, gets us square. I'm hopefully square with the staunch historians out there who always want to over-check my stuff to make sure that I'm accurate. And it just as a side note, when I was just mentioning that, it makes me think, like, with the tours that are being presented, the ones that I lead, sometimes I'll get folks on there that are very good historians that know what they're talking about. And majority are very respectful and usually wait till after the tour to mention something. That's perfect. Like, even if listening to these podcasts, you catch something on here that might be disproved by history, not talking historically accurate, because I tell ghost stories, I tell legends, they're not always historically accurate. But if there's something that in history disproves a certain story, don't hesitate to send me a message. You can send me a message, you can contact me through the website, contact me on Facebook. I want to know these things. Because sometimes you'll realize that the history that's being corrected may even prove the ghost to be more true. Sometimes there's a certain feel to it that says, well, you didn't know that the ghost story also featured this little piece of information. And then you come back and say, no, historically, that wasn't right. And I say, well, no, it is, because the person always spent time in such and such room, for example. So sometimes it even helps the ghost story to be corrected, if not just from the sideline of saying, okay, we want our tours to be historically accurate, because not only are we presenting ghost stories and trying to entertain folks, but we also want people to hear about their history, to know the origins of the life that surrounds them in the location where they live, or the location that they're a tourist and they're visiting. You know, it's important to be accurate. As promised, I present to you another spiritual episode. I hope these are doing well. I hope people are enjoying them. I know some folks, they come to me, they expect, you know, the history, the interesting darker history and the ghost stories, but I mean, this is a very important part of it as well, because by being more spiritual, you increase your quote-unquote psychic abilities. So if you can read the energy of spaces around you, especially those out there who are paranormal investigators, you know, this is a good thing for you. Because if you consider yourself only on the scientific side of things, you can almost close your mind off to many layers that comes with investigating a haunted place or a haunted house. You know, going into a room where many experiences happened, the scientific thinker will be too busy staring at their tool waiting for something to happen. But instead, you know, like reading the space, you know, if you should even be in that room at all. Because sometimes rooms feel more clear than others, and you can waste your time by going into a location for days on end waiting for something to occur. But if you had increased your spiritual awareness, your psychic ability, you go into a space and you're like, okay, this space feels calm. But then you go into another space and, okay, you know, I'm feeling the anxiety, I'm feeling the dread. There's got to be something in here. So by building your spiritual awareness, it definitely helps you in relation to the paranormal. But this one, this subject this week, not so much the same as that. Although it does build your spiritual awareness, because it builds your attention span. So it's the idea known as Wu-Wei. If you want to look that up, it's W-U space W-E-I. Very well known. If you want to look up a philosopher who applied this to his life many, many years ago, I highly recommend the speeches of a man named Alan Watts. That's W-A-T-T-S. Amazing philosopher. Amazing views on reality and life in general. And not to mention, I mean, his voice, his amazing voice that just kind of soothes you just listening to it. But just try to avoid when you're listening to actually listen to his words, because sometimes his voice is so soothing that you just kind of realize you're just too relaxed and you're not listening. That's happened to me so many times. But yeah, check out Alan Watts in relation to what I'm about to talk about, as well as many books out there. And the Tao Te Ching, which is a famous book by Lao Tzu, is based almost solely on this idea, on this way of life. So the full idea behind it, the overarching reason for it, is the thought that struggling to control your life will only make things worse. Now, this could easily dive into the religious. And if you're not religious, just take it from this point of view. There's teachings in every single religion that coincide with each other. So there is common thought among every religion in the entire planet, which makes people think that either from a human level or from a teaching level back in those days, that they were kind of communicating with each other and that there was a underlying foundation to how one should live their life. So when I state struggling to control your life on a human level makes things worse, some people might akin that to believing in God. So when I say that you should be giving up to whatever higher power is controlling reality, it's not to state that, you know, it's a religious, organized religious God that I'm speaking of. It's just the overall reality that we're currently in. So when I say struggle to control, it means you constantly obsess over things that you have to do in life. So I need to become a doctor, for example, because if I don't become a doctor, my parents are going to hate me forever. So you have to struggle to get to a certain point, but deep down, you don't want to be a doctor. You might not like that life. You don't want the stress of it. You want the stress of having to save people's lives. You know, maybe you're more of the type of soul who wants a calm life. Maybe you're more drawn to certain things like a creative endeavor, for example. So instead of being a doctor, you want to be a writer. So then that's what you're drawn towards. That's what you've always been good at since you were a child. It almost seems like you were put on this planet to do that. But you're struggling with control, like which way do I go? Because if your parents tell you that, you know, being a writer most likely is going to make you poor and not going to be able to afford anything because, you know, writing, you have to succeed, you're not going to make a ton of money, then you might think that you have to go and be a doctor. And then you're struggling to control that life, a life that technically you don't belong in. And the life, the karma keeps hitting back on you, trying to push you where you belong. And this struggle just is disturbance throughout your entire life. Now, it's not going to ruin you. Like, none of this is life or death. You could live a good life. You have a family and you're giving back to society, giving to charity, et cetera, et cetera. You could have a good life from being a doctor. There's always that struggle deep down that you need to control the things around you. As similar to an idea that was floated to me when it was just the other day, actually. I was I forget who I was talking to about it, but it's the idea that there's people out there who have everything in life. You know, you call them rich folks. You know, they have the nice house and the nice car, and they seemingly have everything they could ever want. They don't want for anything at all. There's no struggle in their life. Yet, if you look into certain specific situations, this isn't everyone, this is just generally speaking, there still seems to be a disturbance in their life. And one person that I mentioned, it was most likely because they were afraid of losing everything they have. Because if a person gets to a certain point of being so overly rich that it's just, you know, collect and hoard and keep. And, you know, I have to look good for others and I have to own this, you know, this antique is unique and it costs a lot of money. So I have to own it so I can tell others that I have this thing, you know, it's just constant throughout. So there's definitely disturbance there because not only do they have to acquire the things that they may or may not be able to afford, but they have to be able to keep them as well. So when there's certain threats to this, like increased taxes or the thoughts that maybe some rich people have too much, and then they compare them with people who have much less. You know, these are all threats to that lifestyle that they've so connected themselves with. Like this is how they have to live their life. And if they fail from that life, the shot to their reputation, the thought shot to their ego, their families won't respect them as much. It's just all so stressful. So coming at it from the other point of view of the supposed art of not doing states that there's a certain reason why you're here, that the best way to live your life is just to observe it, to see what comes towards your way and to react to it, or to start down a certain path, being mindful of every action that you take along the path and not forcing anything. So if you do something that advances you down the path that you think you should be going, and everything seems to line up to support you and kind of push you forward, then it's almost like a sign that you're going down the right path. But if everything seems to line up and work against you, well, then you got to decide, you know, I'm going to fight this and push on, or I'm just going to allow life to kind of fight back and push me in a different direction. Now, some people say you should fight. I think the personal teaching on this is to fight and to compete and to win. But, you know, you can see it in a different light. And one of the greatest analogies that was provided on this is the idea that a person in life should be like water. It's the idea that to be soft and yielding to all the changes that happen around you. So as you're pursuing something, you know, things are going to happen to push back on you that you can just kind of like work your way around it. You know, you don't have to fight against the stresses. You can, quote unquote, avoid them and go down a different path, because I think it's just like knocking you the correct way that you need to go. So if you're pursuing this supposed passion in life, you know, the path that you're taking is not always a straight line. So being soft and yielding, this protects you in the sense that you're not pushing yourself into stresses that could eventually hurt or ruin you, but that you are taking a path that seems to fit your personality, fit your mindset. You know, so you'll have a healthy mind when you go on to the next step and the next step. And maybe the next step after that doesn't seem right, keeps pushing back and it's not working out. So then it takes you to a different step. You adjust and you move. So like kind of like water rolling down a hill that comes in contact with a rock, instead of destroying the rock, it's going to go around it. So the idea is that you can do this on any path in life as well. And it's the same thing with when you're dealing with others. If this is what your path takes you to, having to deal with others, you don't take on their problems. You know, instead, you're working with what's best for you and working around it. Now, if there's ways you can help, then you'll do that, but it's not going to affect your overall goal and your dream in life. You might be thinking, well, Daniel, if you know, you don't face your challenges, then, you know, how are you going to grow as a person? And you're absolutely right. I agree with that completely. So I think the biggest challenge in life and reality is the challenge of fear. You know, we can be fearful about the next thing that we're going to do. We could be fearful about our plans for the future. You know, what seems right to us in a moment isn't going to be always easy. So certain aspects about the thing that you're very excited to do that are going to create fear. So I always see this as a bit of a pull back and forth. So on one side you have excitement, and on the other side you have fear. So the excitement side, I'll start with the good and then end with the quote-unquote challenging. So on the excitement side, excitement is what propels you forward. So if you're not excited about doing something, it might not be the right thing for you. Of course, you have to see the difference between, you know, am I excited about this, but I also have a bit of fear. Don't let the fear overtake that and then think it's not the right thing to do. You know, being fearful and excited can happen at the exact same time. You know, it's like when I originally started doing the tours, I was definitely not the ham of the group. I was definitely not the person who could go in front of a group and speak easily. In fact, I avoided public speaking like it's the plague. It was my worst fear in all of life throughout all my teenage years. I avoided it completely. But then life presented me with an opportunity that I wanted to go out and do these tours. I wanted to tell stories and talk about history to groups of people. This is what it was pushing me towards that as a future career. So I knew I had to face my fear of public speaking, because there's no way you can be a tour guide without speaking to the public. It's not possible. I mean, you could nowadays with YouTube, but that's not what I wanted to physically be there. I do the podcast, but I don't do YouTube videos for that reason alone, is I want to physically be there to interact with folks. So I had to face my fear. But the thing is, I knew deep down there was still that excitement to do this. So I knew that the future result of what I was leading towards was worth facing my fear, and also all the signs around me, all the things in life that were propelling me into this way of life, this business, it was pushing me forward, not pushing me back. It's things would happen, locations would be open to it, certain scripts would fall into place, ghost stories would come at the right time, historians would give me information that kind of validated ghost stories at the right time. And as the scripts were being formed, you know, things just kind of fall into place, and it feel like the right thing to do. You know, certain parts of what I was doing became very easy to do, and that was also a sign that I was doing the right thing. So facing my fear of public speaking, I mean, those first few times, I still remember with stress. One of the first ones I ever did was we had a small ghost walk at Battlefield Park in Stony Creek. It only lasted a couple seasons. They kind of did their own. It wasn't that many stories, unfortunately, but you know, everything worked out for us being there. And then I had an opportunity to stand there and tell one of the stories of Albion Mills, the old town up in the escarpment above Stony Creek there. And I remember just something clicked inside me. So coming into that night and previous times before that, I was scared. You know, I was talking to people for regular investigative events was a bit of a challenge. But then something clicked for me in that story that I was telling, that I switched and I went into the detail. I was just kind of like in the zone. So by facing my fear, I eventually got to a point that I still get nervous. Especially like tonight, I have to go lead for the very first time the Dundas Ghost Walk. And I'm a little bit nervous about that because it's a brand new script. I'm not as comfortable with it. You know, I'm going to be telling stories I never really told to people before. So I'll still face those challenges and those fears, but now I can move through them much easier. Beginning, it's harder. Eventually, it becomes easier. But underneath it all, there's an excitement. Just like I'm excited to go do the Dundas Ghost Walk tonight. Yeah, a bit of fear, a bit of nervousness, but overall, I'm excited. I love the stories. I want to tell them. I want people to hear the history. You know, this is my goal in life. And that overdoes the fear every single time. So excitement and fear, think of yin and yang. You know, they have to exist at the same time. They're always on opposite sides. But that you can bring them both together. And I know with the tours, as an example, that having that little bit of fear inside of you is actually an advantage. That somebody who can feel the fear but not let it identify them can use it as energy. Because fear is energy. So I can take that fear, use it as energy to tell the stories, and it can turn into excitement. And that excitement comes out in the stories, and then the group themselves also feel that excitement. If I use that fear to also like dive deep into more fearful moments in the stories, then people can fear that too. So you can use it in pretty much any type of employment, any type of job, any type of career you're trying to go into. You can use fear to your advantage. Like just an example is like going into an interview. You're going to be afraid to go into that interview, but you can use that to your example. You convert that energy and then let it out. And plus it humanizes you. So if the interviewer sees that you're a little bit nervous to be there, it doesn't really work to your disadvantage because they will see you as a human being. Maybe they're a little nervous coming in, having them, you're the first time they ever interviewed anyone. It's possible they're nervous too, so then you guys can relate on that. But just don't let it overtake you, because it will come off as weakness. So fear is fine, but don't let it overtake you. Because in the end, life is about moving forward. You face your fears and you grow, and you face more fears and you grow. And as long as that underlying base of excitement is there, and that underlying base of the world reacting to you in the correct way, all the signs you're on the right path, you're going to get propelled forward. I know currently in modern times that there's so much fear in the world today with like the news stories and the social media. Everybody seems to talk about things that scare them and never about the things that motivate them. I mean, there's some out there, but I don't think they get the same amount of traction as fearful stories get. Seems the fear stories get more people looking at it, and this then spreads. It's almost like a virus. So then people who grew up with this type of fear, they end up being quote-unquote sheltered. And when somebody is sheltered, it almost seems like their fear guides them. Their fear overtakes them. You know, there is no excitement to do anything. And sometimes it can be too much that you never push yourself forward. Now, I'm very happy to see at the same time that the fear grows, also the motivation grows. And there are a lot of great podcasts out there, great YouTube channels out there that try and motivate young men and women to be their best selves. But it almost seems like right now it could be a 50-50. One side could be winning one day, the other side is supposedly winning the next, but it's too much. You know, we should be motivated as a whole. The majority of society should be based on excitement, based on love, based on helping, over based on fear and based on othering and based on ideologies. You know, you should be living life to the fullest and the best and not dreading being here. And I think in the end, this idea of the art of non-doing not only stops you from doing the things that might cause stress and put you on the wrong path, but it also stops you from doing the things that build fear in your life and build doubt in your life and stop you from going forward. Because if you allow reality to kind of come in and propel you forward, you know, you feel that excitement to move towards a certain path, to move towards a certain goal. If you can feel it without the mind virus coming in and telling you that you're not good enough and telling you that you can't achieve it, if you can just focus on nothingness and let everything play out in front of you and around you, then I think that's the great way to live. So I'm all for it. In the end, I'm 100% on board. And I highly recommend you check out the teachings of Alan Watts. That's a great place to start on this. If just to listen to his absolutely amazing voice, that's the only reason you're doing it. I highly recommend it for that too. But his teachings are second to none. He's just a very unique person, had a very unique take on reality. And then just do searches for Wu Wei and the art of non-doing, and find books out there and just study it. I'm telling you, it's going to help you. It's going to change the way that you look at life in a very positive manner. Anyway, that's the show, everyone. I hope you enjoy the spiritual episodes. I do them like once a month, give or take. It's really helped me. It's really helped me in my life. I hope you get some value from that. Again, if you want to support me, best way to support the podcast is just to leave a review anywhere, however you listen, Apple, Spotify, Google, whatever. Just leave a review. It helps with the algorithm and stuff. You can also join on Facebook. I have a discussion group going, GG Daniel Podcast. Feel free to come out and join the group. All the new episodes get posted there. Any other types of behind the scene things, like for example, the article I just read to you, I'm going to post on that page. GG Daniel Podcast on Facebook. Thanks, and I'll talk to you next week.